He had fired over the heads of the rebellious prisoners. Instantly, there was a rush toward him, and he was pinned up against the door. He tried to use the other pistol, but he was too tightly pressed. He struck out and kicked. He pushed, and at last he released his pistol so that he was able to point it in the face of the ringleader. He pulled the trigger, and the hammer fell. But though a spark fell into the pan, the powder had fallen out, and no report followed. Maddened at the result, he raised the weapon and gave the foremost man such a blow in the face that he fell back and tripped over some obstruction on the floor. His fall caused several others to fall over him, and that gave Stephen an opportunity to reopen the armory and arm himself with another pistol. The sea was running high. Great waves dashed over the deck of the ship, and the rigging rattled until it was impossible for those on deck to hear an ordinary pistol shot. Decatur then emerged from the armory, and with a pistol in each hand, ordered the men on deck. One of the prisoners, who understood more English than his fellows, demanded to know by what right Decatur interfered with them. "By what right? You are my prisoners, for I represent the United States. Go on deck, and you may get off with light punishment, but dare you to lay a hand on me, and you shall all be strung up to the yardarm, I, every one of you." "Put down that popgun," said the man. As he spoke, he tried to knock it out of Decatur's hand, but not only did he fail, but he received the contents in his face and fell to the deck, dying. The sight of his wounds unnerved the others, and they hurried to the deck to seek their captain and lay a charge against Decatur of murder. But the second pistol shot had been heard, and Lieutenant Summers, with a number of the men, met the prisoners as they came up the companion ladder. He quickly marshaled them on deck and ordered his men to kill the first that attempted to move. Then he sent down to the lower deck and learned from Decatur what had happened. Captain Barron was summoned, and the complaint laid before him. The prisoners were no longer allowed their freedom, but placed in irons, and even their captain was placed under control. "Once again you've saved the ship, Decatur, and you shall not be forgotten," Commodore Barry exclaimed as he grasped the young officer's hand.
"We must get rid of these prisoners, Commodore."
"Yes, Captain, and I think it well to sail for Guadalupe and see if we can exchange them for an equal number of our men." "I don't care if she carried 100 guns. I should tackle her just the same, for no man, admiral or commodore, shall insult the United States flag while I'm serving under it." The sharp rattle of the drum echoed through the rigging of the little American schooner, and the men quickly responded to the call. They were at their posts at the guns and by the sheets and halyards as quietly as if they had been automatons. The Enterprise carried one long gun and 11 small ones, so the lieutenant had but little chance against the enemy. "Cast loose the long gun. Load her up at once." In about 40 seconds, the long gun was cast loose and loaded. Sterrett looked over his men and, from practical experience, knew the capabilities of each. "Hamilton, come here. Take your place by the long gun. I reckon you're the sharpest side on board."
"I can see through a stone wall as well as the best of them," answered Hamilton with a grin.
"Take a sight. The enemy must be crippled. We must rely on strategy rather than strength. Where do you think you can strike her?"
"Anywhere you say, Cap'n."
"All right, Hamilton. Do the best you can."
"It's breezy here," said Lieutenant Markham as a shot from the Tripoli swept over the deck, doing no damage saving knocking over a barrel of water.
Hamilton had carefully sighted his long gun. He was in no hurry. He wanted to hit something more than a barrel of water when he fired.
Away sped the shot with a sharp hum, and Sterrett watched its course through his glass. There was a cloud of spray, followed by another, and then another as the shot skimmed over the waves, its velocity decreasing as it neared the enemy. There was a crash of timber, and everyone knew that the Tripoli had been hit. The enemy was now alive with active men. She bore down on the schooner and poured a broadside into the Americans, but little damage was done. Sterrett saw his advantage, and getting the Enterprise in a raking position, returned the broadside, some of his shots ripping holes in the Tripoli. The waves were covered with the spray of passing shots as they skimmed over the top of the crests. Sterrett called to Hamilton, "Can you take down her mizzenmast?"
"I can try, sir."
"I want certainty. Can you do it?"
"Yes, sir."
"That's better. Let her rip."
Hamilton, proud of the confidence placed in his skill, watched his opportunity and aimed his long gun carefully. The Tripoli poured another broadside into the schooner, killing a gunner and wounding a seaman. But scarcely had the cheers of the enemy testified to their delight than Hamilton's long gun had sent out its puff of smoke, and soon there was a snapping and crashing as the mizzenmast of the Tripoli went over the deck into the blue waters of the Mediterranean. It carried the ensign with it, and there was a rousing cheer from the men on the Enterprise.